This episode of Where Genius Grows is brought to you by K Street Coaching. Carly Anderson, welcome to Where Genius Grows.
Thank you so much, Gideon. I'm so happy to be here with you.
We're going to have fun today. I've invited you to this conversation because earlier this month, it's October 2020, I received a master certified coach credential, and you were instrumental in that process. How I got to know you is this January, a longtime friend, Hallie McNabb, who eons ago I got to know as a fellow coach trainer in the program that I was a coach trainer in. She had helped me level up to become a professional certified coach in 2014. Her support was exemplary, and she and her partner were at my house for dinner in January. And I said, okay, it's time for me to pursue the master certified coach credential. You're my beacon. What do I do? And she said, well, easy. You contact Carly Anderson. Okay. And you were the mentor who worked with me to ensure that my coaching was at the appropriate level before I submitted my application to the International Coaching Federation. And I want to talk about the moment that I find myself in before we go back and forth. The moment that I find myself in is reminding me of something that happened in 2005. In 2005, I completed grad school and I had studied Eastern Classics as my final graduate degree. For this program, I had to choose between either studying Sanskrit or studying classical Chinese, and I didn't want to choose. So I studied Sanskrit, promising myself that I would move to Western China afterwards, to a place where there wasn't a lot of English. I wanted to have the challenge as a grown-up of moving to a place where I couldn't speak the language, where I couldn't even learn the alphabet in an afternoon as I had done with Devanagari, and have the challenge of orienting myself in a strange language. And I remember the first few days before my ears were even able to make sense of the sounds of Mandarin Chinese, I felt like I was living outside of language. And I've never had another experience like that. And yet at this moment, having become a freshly minted master certified coach, I'm finding myself having an experience that's very similar to that living outside of language feeling that I had in 2005. I can't quite put my finger on it. Maybe we can put our fingers on it here in this conversation. But these are some of the reasons that I wanted to introduce you to a broader world here today. So you ready to dive in?
Thank you. Oh my gosh. Just that opening alone, I want to dive into Sanskrit, Chinese, my tattoo of the Om symbol on my ankle is the only piece of Sanskrit I know, but that's a whole interesting conversation you've already opened up, Gideon.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've painted in a little bit about myself, but I want to hand the spotlight over to you. Carly, when you were growing up, who was the first person you remember truly seeing you and going out of their way to bring out the best in you?
I didn't know you were going to ask me that. That's a good question. Well, I grew up in Australia. I've lived in the United States since 2001, but I grew up in a very small country town in South Australia called Murray Bridge, Manum, two different towns. And the first person I really felt saw me was my first boss. His name was Paul Frampton, and he owned a real estate agency in the small town of Murray Bridge. And he was a Rotarian. And he saw me as a very shy, studious person who was doing the front office for him at the time. And he could see that I needed to develop my skills with getting out of my shell. That's what he called it. And so he thought it'd be great for me to be a Rotarian charity person who would have to raise money for Rotary. And I was, okay, well, if my boss says so. But he was just such a kind person, and he could see the undeveloped soul in me or something in me, and I felt like he just nurtured a part of me I didn't even know existed. And that shifted my life. I actually ended up going overseas because I won a trip to Europe. So at the age of 17, I was off to Europe for 6 weeks. That wow. changed my life. And that was because of him.
And how did that trip to Europe change your life?
Growing up in a small country town, it wasn't my vision to go traveling overseas at the age of 17. And none of my family, my immediate family, including my brothers, have to this day been outside of Australia. I'm the only one who's literally been, and I left Australia, so to speak, just for a travel when I was 17. I moved another 21 years later to the United States. I don't know. I mean, how could have I known how my life would unfold? It's just mind-boggling to even know how to answer.
Huh. Well, one thread I want to pick up is how you were in this front desk position and someone saw something, believed in you, and set you off on a different trajectory. When I first moved to Washington, D.C., little known fact, I struggled to find my way into the workforce. I had, you know, this delightful academic background, fun language skills, had just come off of living in Western China and Japan for a year, but I didn't know up and down about professional DC. And I ended up temping at the front desk of a think tank where I think a lot of the staff there saw me and were alarmed. but one particular fellow of this think tank, a journalist named Stefan Teil, took one look at me and he said, "You really need to speak to a coach." And I could tell that he had my best interest at heart. And it was still one of the most offensive things I had ever heard. I was like, "What do you mean I need to speak to a coach?"
That's funny.
Right? Like, yeah. You know. Lo, these many years later, it's hilarious. A couple of years ago, I saw him in Berlin and reminded him of this. But yeah.
I hope you thanked him.
Yeah. Oh, profusely. And I kind of want to talk to him about it now. But if you wouldn't mind, please spell out how that initial trip to Europe away from Australia brought you to where you are today and what you do today.
Well, I don't think there's any one little path that I can draw from A to B because it was a meandering, wandering path as life is. However, I feel like that trip, first of all, I remember vividly being in the aeroplane, first time ever being in an aeroplane, going from Adelaide to Sydney and looking down and going, "Oh my gosh, it's green," because where I grew up, it was mostly brown. I live in California, Southern California now, and I seem to have come back to part of my upbringing because it's often very brown where I live. But Sydney is extremely green. And within a couple of days of even just flying through Sydney, I knew I was going to live there. And then going to Europe opened the world for me, literally, because I didn't know anything about people outside of where I lived. There was no exposure that I'd ever had to a bigger picture of life. I was very much considered a naive person. I remember how often I was told until I was in my late 20s, oh, you're so naive. You're so naive. And they would say it as if I was just clueless. And I guess I was. I wasn't a worldly person. Even though I traveled when I was 17 and then I traveled a number of times in my 20s, backpacked through Europe with a Danish woman who'd worked as a waitress at the same place I had in my 20s in Australia and all sorts of things. All of that, I think, just opened me to seeing that there was a bigger life that I could have. I had no vision of a life outside of Murray Bridge, but I knew I wasn't meant to be there. I always, once I got into my late teens, I just knew I was not meant to stay there, but I didn't know where I was meant to be. So I often just said, boyfriend or husband, I have had a few of those, by the way. This is my third husband, who I've been married to now since 2001, but I had one at 19 and I love him. He's a beautiful soul. But I was like, I'm not meant to be married. And he'd say, well, I hope you find what you're looking for. Then I had a boyfriend in my 20s. After 4 or 5 years, I said, I'm going to Sydney. He was like, oh no, I hope you find what you're looking for. I got to Sydney. I was had another longer term. And the same thing. And I was restless. And I feel like the world was calling me and I didn't know what it was calling me to be. Mm-hmm. And there's many things I could say from there, but it's not a journey that I could say, how did I get here? It's just a lot of different aspects of myself I had to trust along the way and just say, keep going, keep going, keep going.
And at some point, keeping going led you to become a coach. What was that point in the journey?
Well, my first career was in the advertising industry. Accidental, I just needed a job, but I found that I got a job I loved in the media department of a large advertising agency in Australia, and I transferred from Adelaide to Sydney with that. And then I just knew I wanted to start my own business. I don't know why, but I did. And so at the end of my late 20s, I started a business in corporate communications with another person who became my husband, second husband. And we were doing corporate consulting and strategic work around vision, values, how to create a very graphic story of those and have corporate storytelling happen from the C-suite through the organization. And I realized we weren't making a difference. I was making a lot of money, getting in front. I was usually the only woman in the room and I was in my early 30s. And yet I knew we weren't making a difference. They were having a great time understanding the vision and values and talking about that, but what was actually happening? So I had that question. And then one of my colleagues in Australia, when I was actually staffing at the back of a personal development program, he turns to me one day and he says, Carly, I think you would be a great coach. I'm bringing this coach training program to Australia. And I went, what are you talking about? He said, oh, there's this thing called coaching. I said, you mean sports coaching? Because I'd been into sport all my life. He said, no, this thing. He said, I think you'd be a great coach. And I was like, I'm not a people person. I'm a businesswoman. I remember saying that to him. He says, oh, I think you're a people person. I went, all right, send me the information when you have it. So 3 months later, he did. I did the first 125 hours in person of the Coach U training program ever brought to Australia, any coach training program. I fell in love and I realized that this is the missing piece, is having coaching after some strategy or consulting work in an organization. That was the piece. And so that's how I came to coaching. It found me.
Yeah. I remember just resonating with your story that after I had escaped from the front desk job that I described earlier, I fled through alumni connections that I wove into the world of international development. And I was working for contractors to USAID, and I felt lost. A colleague of mine from that time describes me as fitting into the team in the same way that you might see a fish in the desert. Well-liked, but interesting person to be here, you know. And one of my trademark moves at the time was to, you know, beg people for informational interviews and try and make them tell me what I should be doing. And I was just so stumped by life. One day I got in front of a colleague in this new USAID world who had been a USAID country head in a number of different very high profile countries. And she said, "Well, Gideon, what is it that you want to do?" And I had no answer. And she said, "You know what? I want you to come check this thing out." And she brought me to a landmark education introduction. And so I was exposed to coaching through that. And I thought, oh, you know, it's good. I like this, but you can't make a living doing it. And then I got to know accomplishment coaching, which was the coach training program that I went through. And sure enough, learned that yes, people do make a living. And so I pursued that. And I feel like I've just closed out a chapter where I've gone from coaching, making a living doing it, really having a profound impact on people's lives. But I think I've just stepped into a very new kind of space at the master coaching level. And I'd love for you to talk about the transition that you underwent going from being a coach to being a master certified coach. And we can also talk about how you train people as they pursue credentials or mentor people on the specific ways that they need to take what they already know and reassemble it and grow in order to reach the next level they aspire to reach.
Well, and I would really love to hear, and I think people listening would love to hear as well, about your experience of being a newly minted MCC, because that's really valuable, and especially in this time that we're in right now, is how you did that when the pandemic hit. You were studying in the middle of the pandemic hitting. Mm-hmm. And I feel like I just want to make sure too that you share your experience, because you're new and it's going to be a different experience.
Well, I teed this conversation up by talking about how I feel like this reminds me of living those few days in Lanzhou, China, outside of language. So you bet we're going to get to that.
Good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I am a voracious learner. Like, I think we share that value from... I found myself a really good student, and that wasn't valued in my family, study and education. So I was kicked out of home metaphorically as soon as I could be a lesser burden to my family. That was really the message. I can give you all of this having done my therapy and being a long way away from that. But it's like, you see the pattern only afterwards of what happened.
Well, I want to remark on what you're saying right now, because as we're having this conversation, I can't shake the feeling that no matter what you describe, no matter how harrowing the adventures were when you were undergoing them in real time, there's something super clean and super quiet about the conversational space between us that I'm not accustomed to in most conversations. And I think that that's a kind of a hallmark of where you've gotten to.
Oh, thank you. What would you say that is? I can't quite pick that up.
A peace with that you have made with yourself and many of the parts that make up you. That is the sense that I get. And it's a rare sense.
Mm. Well, thank you. Yeah, I'd say that's true. Is I've done a lot of my own searching. I knew something wasn't right with me in my 20s, and I didn't know what that was, and it ended up being childhood abuse that I didn't know about. And that was so I started my what's wrong with me journey in my 20s, which led me to therapy, and it led me to being outcasted in my family for a long time. In fact, my father for the rest of his life until he died recently I was the bad person who uncovered family abuse, not of his doing, by the way, but of other people. And that I feel like has been part of my learning journey that has informed who I am today. Is in my 20s, I studied at night school. I studied about everything I was learning in order to get the education that I was felt denied from my family, and I blamed them for a while. And then I realized, you know, that's not my path. And I could have gone back to university, and I tried a number of times, and I just couldn't be sitting down in a university environment. So I studied, and then I did personal development. I ended up in Money and You with Robert Kiyosaki in the late 80s. And that was transformational for me, like Landmark, very similar. They come out of the same frame of thinking. And so the learning part has been so important to me and continues to this day. That's the thing that keeps me going until the day I die. I want to be just learning about life. And I think that that's the underlying frame that has to happen if you're going to get to MCC, is you have to be humble enough to realize you never know enough. You don't know anything, as they say at some stage, but you have to know everything and know nothing all at once in order to master the present.
And to not hold that tension as contradictory.
Yeah. Yeah, so I know I mentioned back to my family and that and the whole how that impacts, but I think that it's, and you said the clean space of that, and it's true. I continue to do, and I feel like that's one of the things that's often present in the coaches that come to me for MCC mentoring. And I'm very grateful for the very senior people who come to me for mentoring around the world. A lot of them have done a lot of personal growth work and continue to. The ones that haven't tend to be the ones that struggle the most. They haven't done enough of their own healing journey, reconciliation of their life path, being okay with the horrors of life. I'm not okay with a lot of the horrors of life right now, but I'm in touch with my humanity about everything that's happening in the world that in a way I've never been before. And I feel it's because I'm open through my own journey of learning and discovery to looking at myself and the hard spots and not judging those as wrong anymore, because I did for a very long time. What about you?
Is the question about, could you rephrase the question?
Yeah. What about you let me take that, retract that question, because you were going to ask something else. I'm going to take that back for now.
Well, no, I want to surf the wave of the curiosity that you pushed in my direction. I just want to make sure that I'm surfing.
All right.
The wave you intended.
Let me give you the wave I was on there. So we can surf together on that Californian wave right now, seeing I'm here. What I was going toward is, what's been your path to owning your parts that has brought you to this place, being able to recognize my clean parts, so to speak.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I didn't want to bring in a library of sob stories without knowing where to go.
Go for it now.
You know, it's funny. The more we progress in life, the more of a high level perspective we can take on things. And one thing that I'm keenly aware of is that I grew up in a household where my mother was not happy with the level of financial contribution that my father brought to the table. And so one reaction I had to that was to get myself into a comfortable career and never be someone, you know, who didn't have enough. And then when I took a leap of faith, and I think that this is a making myself vulnerable kind of thing, I took a leap of faith to become a coach, I no longer had that safety net. And it was walking out of that last job that provided that safety net, that impregnability. I walked out on a Friday, met my wife the following Sunday, and then spent several years really stumbling over myself. And, you know, that was brutal because I never imagined that it could even be possible to fall in love, to start a marriage, to start a family. You know, I was not going to let myself be in that position. And there I was, you know, naked before my worst fear, trying to build a life on top of that. And even as recently as a few years ago, had some really tense moments because of that. But I wouldn't say that I've got it all squared away yet, but you know, just the menace of being in a similar dance as my parents, I think that menace will always be there. But I think that I'm getting to a point where I'm realizing that no, I'm not fated to copy anything. And I have smooth edges and rough edges, and so does everyone. And you know, just learning to be okay with that. Yeah. Does that answer the question you had in mind?
I don't know.
Okay.
I wanted to just hear from you, but that, yeah. I don't know if it answers. But what it does remind me of, seeing we've sort of got a bit of a focus on what is MCC or Master Certified Coach, is,
yeah,
to me, you've heard me say at the beginning of my program, for me, MCC is bringing the humanity back into mm-hmm. coaching.
Yeah.
And this is what we're talking about now, is how can you be fully human and embrace the humanity? Because before pandemic, everybody was like on a path of like more, mm-hmm. and the pandemic hit, and now we're on this, oh my gosh, we've got families, dogs, we've got things in our face, so to speak, while we're doing our work. Yeah. Now it's been normalized as whole human beings. And to me, that's the experience without the pandemic, hopefully, that really is important, is can you be with your whole, first of all, your own whole humanity, your own journey, and be okay with where you are, own your own feelings, examine them, examine your journey, and then be open to other people as humans first, rather than I'm being paid to get a result. I get good results, so therefore I'm a great coach. You may be a great coach at getting results, but how you're going about that is going to make a big difference to what happens for that person you're coaching after you finish coaching them. That's just mm-hmm. an assertion I'll make for the moment. What's your response to that? Happy to have you have a different one too.
Yeah. I think the main difference that I'll assert is that as normalized as we say it is to, you know, have a family and all of the distractions that we were able to compartmentalize before, I think a lot of that normalization is lip service. I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah.
I think that there's a lot of stuff intruding into the focus that we want to have, that I want to have, and integration is far away still.
Yeah, I agree.
Let's pick up the thread of your journey to master certified coach level coaching, but also what that has meant for you.
Yeah, so when I got my coach training and realized that this is what I wanted to do, and then I sold my half of the business, and here I was in Australia, one of the first coaches. And so that, and I had been in the advertising industry, had a lot of contacts there. So all of a sudden they contacted me and said, hey, what is this thing called coaching? Can you speak about it? So here I am, a brandly new trained coach, talking about coaching. And so one of the things I learned early on is when you talk about something, you learn it better. When you teach something, you have to learn it even better to talk about it. So it was a gift. And what I learned straight away is to take it one step at a time. Even though people would come to me for coaching, they're really, what I realized in the early days is I was more of, my husband would say, a consoach, a consultant acting as a coach. And that's because I attracted a lot of clients who were business owners like I had been. So they were really, well, you're a business owner, you know what it's like. Tell me how to be a business owner.
What do I need to do?
Yeah, what do I need to do? I had one client who I can think of who's just, I worked with for many years, who wasn't like that, who was an award-winning business owner. She didn't need me, but she wanted me as her coach for quite a few years. And so that was a gift, because she really was high performing. So why did she want me as a coach? Well, because she had no one else to talk to with her employees around her. And so the journey was, first of all, based on need to keep learning about how to be a great coach. And you can only do that by coaching and learning and coaching and being one of these people who, I'm one of these people who is always evaluating how well I did myself. So how did I do today? And that sort of questioning always had me growing and wanting more. So when I met my husband, Michael Stratford, he was already an MCC. He was already pretty well known at that time in the industry. And I was like, oh my gosh, how do I ever get to be an MCC like you? I'll never be there. And he goes, no, you'll be fine. And he really encouraged me to just be on my own journey. And so many coaches want to skip the journey of examining their own path. And I just was always one step at a time, get good at this, then that, then that. And eventually I ended up having enough hours to be MCC, but I'll be honest, having enough hours, once I got my MCC, I did not feel I was MCC. I felt like I had the hours to be it, but I didn't know that I had the skills.
And you're pointing to a really important difference, which is the difference between learning a variety of skills and accumulating a wealth of hours and something that you just called the journey. What is that difference?
Well, for me, I always want to be better. I have a value of excellence. I love excellence. I love professionalism. I love excellence. I also love play. And if I can have excellence and play together, that's fun. That's great. For me, I don't know if I can answer it. I'm not sure how I'm going to answer this. So I'll just say what comes out is, for me, then the opportunity opened as soon as I got my MCC, I was invited by ICF to become an assessor. And I was like, I know nothing. They said, we'll train you, but we need more assessors. Well, that to me, because this is back in 2005, I got my MCC in 2004, and I learned so much because we didn't have a lot of knowledge about the core competencies like we do now. The body of work was not as anywhere near as robust. It was just the competencies, which did stand the test of time for 20 years, but now they've been updated. But studying become an MCC assessor, I realized there's a lot in these core competencies that I didn't know about because I really didn't study them. We weren't taught them that in depth in my coach training program back then. So the journey, I guess, was of learning about what do these core competencies mean and how do they show up in my coaching skills? And I found the competencies so rich in all the sub points that I would take one, like manages emotions or talks metaphor. And I would ask Michael, say, what does this mean? What do I do? How do I become better at this? And so I'm lucky I had a mentor in my house the whole of this time that helped me to learn. But I was always voraciously asking about it.
A side note to our listeners, if you're not a coach and you've made it this far, I applaud you. And I really, really, really want you to pay attention as Carly explains what these core competencies are and what they mean.
Well, the core competencies are like in any professional organization, they have a set of competencies that define the foundation of skill sets. And so within coaching, International Coaching Federation has a set of core competencies which define the set of skills, behaviors, attitudes, beliefs of a professional coach. And they form a wonderful learning foundation as well. I don't know. What would you add to that?
Well, maybe coloring in how conducting a conversation, adhering to these core competencies and addressing specific ones creates a very different type of conversation than you will encounter anywhere outside of coaching.
Well, I always think of it as a conversation with a purpose. Coaching has a purpose, which is a client-driven agenda. And there are many different belief systems about what coaching is, and I'm a bit of a purist. I've done a lot of coaching in the corporate context, and people say to me, oh, but I can't coach in the corporate context because they expect me to be a consultant or to teach them or train them. And yes, I've done really major corporate contracts where I've been employed to do certain work. I have always made sure that I understand how they expect me to show up as a coach, and I let them know that I'm this type of coach and I'm more interested in the human being and how this human being acts, reacts, behaves in order to be happy and get what they want in terms of the next stage of their development, whether that's at work or at home. And for me, the purpose of any coaching session is to, first of all, be present to who, what does the client want? Why would you go to a meeting without knowing what you're there for? And yet many coaches either A, go to a meeting and they believe they know what the meeting is about, the coaching session, so they drive it, or they just start talking and whatever comes out, they go, well, that was a great conversation. And what, but what? So what? So to me, the structure of the core competencies, when you understand them at a deeper level and when you really take them to the MCC skill level, you understand you have to go through the conscious competence stage in order to get to the stage then where you go back to unconscious competence. So it's like knowing all the dance steps, and then you get to a point where you just know how to dance. You just do it. But you have to learn the steps first. So you have to go through that stage. But it requires a lot of effort, I think, to get through the belief systems of many coaches that coaching can be enough, because they do think they have to consult or train.
Yeah, you bring up something that I'm not yet sure how to describe, but it's this tension between what other people expect and what a master coach delivers. And I was asked by a client of mine to speak to several HR people at a top law firm earlier this week, including the CHRO. And I was like, what am I supposed to be talking with them about? Because I kind of sort of knew what they were interested in. And it was the advice that you talked about. But just because they had that agenda in mind didn't change anything about who I am and what I bring to the table. And so I let them know that I understood that they were looking for advice, and I threw some questions at them that just kind of upended their whole conception of the huge training program that they're going to be implementing over the next few years. And I didn't break a sweat. It was fine, you know, and in fact, I rather enjoyed having this conversation with them that made them really look at it differently. And I can say right now that I'm confident if we're meant to work together, they'll appreciate that. And if not, they won't. And that's cool. I mean...
And that's a place of great power to have that feeling of confidence in that. Can I ask you then, given that you have been through the journey this year and where you started and then you became MCC in the journey, what do you feel you can offer differently to a client like that that maybe you weren't able to offer at the beginning of the year?
I'll just use... the example I gave as a case in point. It really comes down to how I relate to myself. I related to myself as someone whose best work is done one-on-one. And then I came to a conversation earlier this week to discover that they're looking to make a difference for somewhere between 500 and 1,000 people. And I think before I just would have said, well, that's not me. And now I'm wondering how it can be me.
Yeah. What shifted in your mindset?
It's not settled yet. I don't know. something. I don't know if it's because of the shift from whatever I was as a coach before to being an MCC now. I don't know if it's because of all of the disappointments that living through this pandemic has dished up, that I've adopted more of a so what attitude. I really can't put my finger on what it is, but I think that I don't know. I don't even know how this fits into the picture, but I'm reminded of a hobby I had in grad school, which was Brazilian jiu-jitsu. And there was an instructor in Santa Fe, where I was. His name was Al Crane, and I think he had been like a global number one ranked Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter. And you know, what everyone said in hushed tones about him was that he liked to start a fight with his opponents arms around his neck. So he's like in a chokehold and trying to fight his way out. And that's what life feels like right now. we haven't addressed it in this interview, but in the decade that I've known what a master certified coach was, I never imagined becoming one while shouldering the responsibilities of education for my 5-year-old, which is what I'm doing right now. So the 8 to 10 hour stretches that I used to think of as a workday do not exist for me right now. I'm trying to figure out, you know, what work can I accomplish while my son is in the next room? What work can I accomplish after sitting with him one-on-one for 2 or 3 hours doing homework, which, I'll be frank, shreds my attention. And I still identify coaching with having boundless attention that is concentrated on the client. And I start most of my working days with my attention shredded, and I have to put it back together. So that's why the image of Al Crane, the Brazilian jiu-jitsu fighter, comes to mind.
Yeah, I hear you. There's a lot to deal with emotionally, socially, spiritually, physically, mentally. And all of that speaks to the metaphor that you used, the jiu-jitsu, and metaphor is so powerful for us humans to work with. And that all speaks to presence to me, is that's where coaching, where life, where everything starts from, is what am I present to? How present am I? How present am I to the whole experience? How do I keep my presence? How do I gain my presence, you know, this moment presence back when I'm distracted or things, life happens?
Yeah. Well, and this conversation about presence gets back to the images I invoked at the beginning of this conversation when I stepped off the plane in Gansu province in 2005 and started trying to figure out, where am I? You know, what is this? I couldn't read any of the signs. I'm a very verbal person. I couldn't read any of the signs. I couldn't understand what people are saying around me. And you know, when we have a way of relating to ourselves and we don't have recourse to that, it's very disconcerting, but it also creates presence. Mm-hmm. And so I was getting to know, you know, myself differently. You know, if I'm not able to communicate you, if I'm not able to communicate with you through, well-crafted turns of phrase, how do I communicate? And I found myself, you know, ordering street food by pointing and smiling and, you know, paying, somehow figuring out what the transaction was going to be. And it was very invigorating to have that experience, and it faded pretty quickly. You know, my ears got used to what the language sounded like. I really applied myself over the next few months to figure out, you know, how do I read all the signs? And I didn't want to be someone who couldn't speak to people. I didn't want to be illiterate. And so I muscled my way through that. And I find myself in a similar position right now, not because I don't speak the language or I can't read the signs, but something just feels very different, and it's forcing a presence upon me. And I think what I'm realizing is that, you know, maybe one way that I've grown is to think of myself as the person who, you know, I coach, therefore I am. I have these really powerful conversations with individuals, and that justifies my existence, and I'm tired of that. I don't necessarily believe it anymore. And it's habitual. So, you know, I wake up, my brain turns on, and there it is. And so how do we create space between whatever is me and that? Mm-hmm. And that's the moment that I find myself in as a freshly minted MCC outside of, in air quotes, language.
So what does that actually mean, outside of language?
Well, I use that to describe how I felt in China when I first got there and couldn't
understand the language.
Yeah. And so I had to, you know, linguistic kind of person, with no recourse to language. And so one of the things that I'm doing right now is, even though I have this, well-honed drive to, work with new clients, I'm entertaining the idea that for the time being, especially now that my time is so limited, maybe don't push so hard to bring on individual clients. Mm-hmm. See what else is out there. See what other kind of ways I can be a coach. And it's so, I'm not sure even how to describe it. It's so counterintuitive, because it is challenging me to break with my automaticity, break up with my automaticity, break up with my automatic ways of being me. And then what? I don't have a vision for then what. And that's a little disconcerting. Mm-hmm. But it's a strong sense of what I have been doing is not what I want to be doing. We haven't even talked about what you were asking about before, you know, how I made this journey in the midst of a pandemic, which is a pretty vivid thing to describe, and something that you had a front row seat to.
Yeah. So rich what you just shared. I mean, how many languages do you speak?
The only ones I speak well are English and German, but there are smatterings of so many of them. And, you know, it's funny because in my household, my wife was born in the Soviet Union. And so she has spoken Russian to our kids since they were born. My son went to a Spanish language preschool, Spanish language immersion preschool. So he got a hefty dose of Spanish for 2 years. And so I have these kids who are, you know, into English and Russian and Spanish. And, you know, I try and keep up with smatterings of those languages, but I've always kind of looked like an idiot to them linguistically. And suddenly my son is in kindergarten that has Mandarin once a week. And finally, I get to shine. It's like, okay, let me help you out here. And so it's really amazing, because he loves that I'm trying to teach him this stuff. And then he's like teaching it to my daughter. And, you know, my daughter runs around the house now saying, wo hen hao, which means, you know, I'm very well, I'm very well. And I finally feel like I have a linguistic contribution to make at home.
It reminds me of the last, when you were in the mentoring program, and at times when the, you know, dealing with everything that was going on, I remember you vividly being like, I don't know that I can continue to do this.
Yes.
and just reminds me when you were talking about the different languages and that, and yet you did, and yes, you trusted something in yourself. And I don't know whether there's a parallel between how you view language and that, but just seeing you go through that and trusting your process. And when I said, just do what you can, and leave the rest to a later time, and you trusted your process. I don't know. I just wanted to bring that forward for some reason. What do you want to say about that?
There's a couple of things that I want to say about the process, because I had I had some really warped ideas about what to even expect. You know, the people I had seen go through the MCC process, almost every single one of them, not every single one, but almost every single one, did not make it on the first try. And so, you know, that created a certain set of expectations. I also had warped ideas about the utility of the core competencies. And I think that was just me putting myself in opposition to something that I didn't fully understand. But when I made a choice for 2019 not to pursue the MCC path, but to focus on growth edge coaching through cultivating leadership, and it's like my time, energy, resources are going in this direction, I also made up, even though nobody said that I had to, I also made up that I was doing something that was fundamentally opposed to MCC level coaching. It's not true at all. And I find that growth edge coaching, as I've learned it, and master level International Coaching Federation style coaching complement each other in beautiful ways. But I had created all of these internal oppositions to what it meant to be an MCC. But when I finally, you know, came to the table and said, Carly, I'm going to pursue this, it was with some of those obstacles, self-created obstacles in mind. And I wanted to lighten my client load a little bit just so that I could focus on that. And then, let's see, I signed up in January for a class that started at the end of February, and then March hit. And in March, you know, no longer, and January, February, I was, we haven't even touched upon what you do as a mentor, but you've got this great system where you have people coaching each other or help supporting each other while coaching real live practice clients. You have a library of materials that includes years worth of blogging on the finer points of each core competency, recordings of coaching at different credential levels so that one can really orient oneself to what's required. I was hitting that library hard in February and thinking, oh, you know, I'm not that far from where I need to be. And then the pandemic hit. And then I suddenly found myself at home all the time. And this is when I was still like afraid to even walk around the block. But I was at home with two kids. My wife, also at home, was being worked harder than she'd ever been worked in her 14 years so far at her congressional office that drafts legislation for all the members. There were all kinds of emergency measures passing at that time, and trying to smooth everybody's ruffled feathers, keep the troops, one who had just turned five, one who was almost two at the time, entertained. And I was exhausted and I wasn't able to concentrate on anything. And, you know, every couple the hour and a half to be with the mentoring group. But I didn't know how I was going to muster the concentration to, you know, review the study materials that you provided in such ample and luxurious supply. I didn't know when I was going to practice, and you can't do any of this without practicing, because that's where the integration happens. you got to practice what you're learning, listen to yourself, and then come back to the table. And if there's no room to do that, nothing's going to happen. So I remember discussing with my wife, you know, like, this is not happening, this master coach thing. And she was like, well, maybe you can do this course again, you know, next year. I'm thinking to myself,
no,
I don't want to. and also thinking, like, look at what is going on around us. Like, this is insane. And people are going to need coaching. Why not, you know, equip myself to have the best possible offering to people who are going to need this. We live in Washington, D.C., which I believe is the biggest coaching market in the world. Have, you know, go through with this. And so I remember one day, it was the day before I was the mentoring program participant who needed to coach someone live in the program. The day before that, my wife wanted to create a little space for me to focus, a few hours to just, you know, listen to what I felt I needed to listen to, read whatever I felt I needed to read. She leaves, takes the kids out. And at that point we'd been home for like 7 weeks. We're exhausted. Half an hour later, she comes back with blood streaming down her face, because she had fallen on a rock near a creek with two kids, and we were terrified. We were like, you know, we'd only been looking at the risks of interacting with others and not at the risks of, you know, if it's just this unit of four without any help, how are we endangering ourselves by running ourselves into the ground? Because we're exhausted, 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 exhausted. And so we asked our nanny to come back that day, and she was back the very next day because she had cabin fever being with her kids and grandkids, and she's like, I'll be there. But it was that opening that allowed me to focus. And when I had that opening, I think tempered by the insanity of the 7 weeks leading up to it, I wasn't going to let anything get in my way. And I was just going to focus on this. So I found people to practice with. I was very clear that what I wanted in practice clients were people that I could mess up with. And I should probably say that me messing up as a coach provides tons of value. It's like I'm not ruining anyone's life. I might, you know, do things, you know, phrase questions a little differently than I would have wanted to or something. But for me, that was messing up, and I needed to do that. And I needed to do that with people who were okay with it. But I found those people and just did not stop until I knew I had what I needed. And it was a taking apart what I knew about coaching and putting it back together again at a much more powerful level.
Oh, that was so delicious to listen to. There's so many, so many life and lessons and wonderful nuggets of learning that you just shared there.
Yeah.
And one of the things that stands out to me is that there is nothing without presence. Mm-hmm. I mean, you had to get through there's so much going on in our lives, heads, physical environments. And one of the things that I think makes a difference is space. Mm-hmm. I mean, we talk about it in one of the characteristics I have for MCC is spaciousness, and it's not new, but giving yourself space in life, which I'm hearing is what you also found a way or wanted to find a way to do. And empathy is another characteristic. And so many people, I think, just think that being an MCC is, oh, well, there are people out there I know who are MCCs and they're not really good coaches. Yeah, that's unfortunately true. But at the same time, there are a lot of people I know in the last 5 years who've got their MCC who are magnificent coaches, especially who really have taken their skills to something that is beyond anything that they could have imagined. And to me, I know many of my clients I've mentored have said, because I've been on my own journey, done what you've done, Gideon, been through it, I've learned, I know what I need, I've got my MCC, but it's the journey of mastery. They are giving much more value. Their clients get more value out of their coaching. Oh, yeah. I have so many examples, and they categorically tell me at the beginning, I have so many that show up and go, I don't know how this is going to, my clients love my coaching as it is. I go, that's fine. Maybe they'll love it this even better. I don't know. But being on the journey and being lifelong learners, I think is just the key. And how do you become the best client, best coach for your clients? And you have to become the best human for yourself and your family in order to be of service to other people. So I don't know, that was just a little bit that was evoked in me as you spoke.
Well, I was doing great work for my clients. And I say that fully aware of the hubris inherent in that statement. And what I learned through the mentoring process was something just wholly different. Still have hubris. but what, you know, this is a vast oversimplification, but I think that within master level coaching, there's a combination of presence and structure. And if you don't have the presence, no amount of structure is going to save your behind. And I think that I had the presence, but I had eschewed the structure. And I think that was my Achilles heel. I considered it nice to have, but ultimately optional. And what I learned in preparation to submit an MCC application was that no, the structure is not only not optional, it's like the best thing since sliced bread. it's so good. And what I was able to effect in terms of providing value for clients when I treated it as an ironclad must-have created so much more space for the clients to be created. I mean, it's just night and day. And I think that's why I'm okay to just sit back and say, okay, I don't know that I need to do this one-on-one thing exclusively, or however I've done things may not be the way I want to do it, because I'm capable of having conversations that are so much more powerful. Why be content to just do what I did before? I think that you were talking earlier about how you have to know everything and know nothing all in the same breath. And I think that I'm recognizing how little I know about what I can do when I bring these skills to the table, that I might as well stop pretending I do know, or that the way I've done things is the way to do things, and maybe sit back and see what situations come along for me to apply them. And I don't really have to sit back too far, because with the advent of online kindergarten and, you know, having my schedule carved up, jigsaw-like in ways that obliterate my attention, the challenge becomes within the chaos, how do I create presence? Mm-hmm. How do I create presence when I know that I will be distracted? What is the level of presence that I can create so that it's not an all or nothing game? It doesn't need to be zero sum. And I resist the living daylights out of that, out of what seems so simple that I just said, because I want it to be quiet. I want it to be, you know, perfectly uninterrupted. But okay, if that's not a given, then what? And I think that's part of the uneasy path that I'm venturing down right now.
Feels like back to the Brazilian jiu-jitsu moves.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, there's something you said too. I mean, people often say to me, well, what did getting your MCC give you? And I said, well, entry into some new opportunities. Mm-hmm. I mean, you're talking about what's next for me and I don't know. And I remember within about 12 months of me getting my MCC, I was given an opportunity to interview for a coaching role with a company that they were selecting people based on who had an MCC, because mm-hmm. they were informed by somebody in the who had one, and they said that's a way you can sort at least to interview. So a whole bunch of MCCs, me one of them, were interviewed, but that was the sorting mechanism. I still had to prove my coaching skills then, and I got a contract that ended up being $250,000 contract, but that wasn't available to me.
Yeah.
And before I became MCC, and I've had so many other opportunities open up. But if someone had said, well, this is going to happen, I couldn't have told them what was going to happen, but I know what happened mm-hmm. and has and continues to happen and the opportunities that have opened up. And I say no to a lot of things by choice because I have my world I want to live in and how I want to contribute and live. Someone yeah. else wants to do it completely differently and what speak in front of and work with how many thousands of people get in, go for it.
Right.
That's great. And those opportunities, it's great to be have those. That it's like a new platter of food gets opened up. You just don't know what's on that platter and when that's going to be presented to you and how. That's my metaphorical experience of MCC.
Hmm. Yeah. I'll share a couple of impressions while they're still fresh. Within the first week, I guess, of finding out that this had happened, I had a couple of conversations with older guard MCCs that I would consider iconic. And the thing that they left me with was, well, it's a lot harder now than when we got it. And it's like, true. Oh, mm-hmm. and to have gotten it on the first try, just was like, oh, that, you know, cause I see you in one way, but you see me in this other way. Like, that's pretty cool. And it's like the scene in Wayne's World where Wayne and Garth meet Alice Cooper and they fall to their knees and they're like, we're not worthy. But it's like in both directions. I feel like the sense that I had was that Alice Cooper was doing that to me. and the other thing is that, yeah, you know, I'm not 12 months into this. I'm about 30 days in, and already, the quality of opportunities suddenly presenting themselves is unfamiliar to me. I'm not sure how to describe it yet, but it still seems unfamiliar. But I'm being reached out to by conference organizers. Hey, would you consider submitting a proposal, please? We really want to hear from you. The types of work opportunities are new. And so I think that there's a way forward for me. Coming back to your theme of honoring humanity and honoring my own humanity, of recognizing that, yeah, I don't have the capacious lucidity that I used to identify with, you know, just truckloads of concentration and attention that I could bring to bear on any problem. That's probably gone for the time being, and maybe I should give up all hope of it and welcome it back when it comes along, but don't count on it. And find ways to make some of these opportunities work and figure out how to sort. I don't even know how to sort right now. That's okay. Recognize that maybe the most important client that I'm working with is my 5.5-year-old who does need a lot of support with school, but has improved by leaps and bounds as I've learned how to be less impatient. And recognize that, no, you know, his way of looking at the world, his motor skills are simply very different from mine. And being present to someone isn't the exclusive domain of fellow adults. It's a I mean, it's easy to say, but it's so hard for me to enact, but I feel like I'm getting there. Mm. And that's huge. I think first and foremost for our relationship. And I think that brings me to something that I would like to share publicly here, which is that having looked at who the other master certified coaches are, I'm not aware of too many dads with young kids. And I'd like to explore what it means to be an MCC with young kids. I'd like to share some of that exploration publicly, but above all else, I recognize it as a real boon to a family itself and humanity in general. And I'd like to spend the next few decades in this field kind of as a gardener, creating a welcoming landscape for dads to become master level coaches.
What a gift. And again, I think the MCC is just a vehicle for, if people take that journey, to get to a level of presence, which is what you're really offering, is listening at a deeper level. One of the key words in all of the key skills evaluated for all the competencies at MCC is depth. And so that's what it brings out of it for me to say, is it's the depth of presence, connection, the listening, depth of listening, just the depth of clarity that you can hear in a person, that you can hear this human. And that's, to me, the father thing you're talking about is the gift. I didn't get that gift growing up of being honored as a child in mm-hmm. terms of, I never had a conversation once with either of my parents. Actually, I have lovely conversations now with my mother, but I've never had a conversation as a child where I was valued for my who I was. What a gift. And to bring into the world is having kids feel the presence of their dad. Mm-hmm. And to me, the MCC is an excuse to have depth of presence, depth of conversation, depth of questions, depth of depth.
You know, yeah.
Can I see you, who you are? Can I see you? Do I see your greatness and beauty and rawness and potential, and not try to change all of that, but be with it? And that witnessing mm-hmm. to me as MCC is, how can I be with this person? I don't care if they earn $1 million or no dollars.
Yeah.
Every human being has some sort of need to be valued for who they are. And I see a great niche for you with your passion there for MCC dads.
Yeah. Well, I've talked about dads, but have barely touched upon, you know, what it even means in my own life. And I'll just share an example from this week. So when I put my daughter to bed, she's almost 2.5. She likes to chat for a little bit afterwards. And at the beginning of the week, she said, "Papa, I don't like it when you shout." And you know, I have an initial reaction of, I don't think of myself as a shouter, but maybe this is an MCC quality shining through. I just take it face value, like, oh, she does see me that way. Maybe I should take a look, you know? And, you know, without rejecting what she said, I just started searching within myself. I'm like, you know, maybe it's like I get alarmed when I see her standing up on her high chair, and I don't want her to, you know, hurt herself, but my reaction may trigger, you know, some bad stuff in her. And so I'm like, okay, you don't like it when I shout, do you? Okay, well, I'll work on that. And then I checked in with her bedtime the next day, and we talked about how I had definitely not shouted that day, and it was a lot better. And I'm like, okay, we're building something here. And then the very next day, she was kind of creating a scene at bedtime, and everyone was a little overwhelmed with her. And when she finally got to bed, she said, "Papa, I'm sorry." And I'm like, "Excuse me, what?" And she's like, "Yeah, I can't remember exactly the words she used, but then she said, it was my fault." And I'm like, "I don't want you to blame yourself, but yeah, it was kind of you." and you know, my big takeaway from this is not that, you know, I hate being a shouter, or I have a daughter who blames herself, but that we have space, and specifically that I have created room in the relationship as a parent for a daughter to advocate on her own behalf like this. And that's, you know, I help clients create that ability within themselves after it has been like robbed of them by their own parents. So I'm glad that she's able to actually go to these sensitive places and doesn't feel like she can't with me.
Oh my gosh, what a beautiful story to share.
Yeah.
The emotional aspect is so important. I mean, just what you did and gifted for her. But again, your ability to be with her emotions and your emotions, huge part of mastery is mm-hmm. emotional content, being with the wholeness and not making any of it wrong and examining it. What a great role model you were for her.
Oh, I mean, I get the sense that she's the role model for me. I guess it cuts both ways, right?
Yeah, you're surfing the same wave.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just look at her and I'm like, wow, huh.
Yeah, beautiful.
Aren't you something?
Yeah. Yeah, and you let her be heard.
Yeah.
I know for me, connection, the commonalities, connection and relationship are the things that have come out in my life, and you've just spoken to both of those. I want connection that feels real and authentic, and relationships that feel real and authentic in that. And that sounds like what you've got there with your daughter.
Yeah. Yeah. And all of this to say, that's why I'm feeling a new zeal to welcome more parents in general, but dads in particular into the realm of master coaches.
Well, let's see where you're at and what you're doing in the next few years.
Yeah.
Remember this interview, Gideon, and we'll come back.
Yeah, I'll be like Senator Lindsey Graham, you know, you can hold me to this.
Remember when you talked about that?
Yeah.
Look at me now. Where are we? It was so much fun. I always find that interesting when you say something like this. I get this real sense that you've just planted this beautiful seed that is going to have its own life now.
Yeah. And people listening to this, you know, you can spread the seed, you know, share this with people that you think would benefit from growing in the ways that Carly and I are talking about. Because I think even just hearing this conversation, if you take no other action, even just hearing this conversation can cause great things to grow.
Mm. That feels just beautiful, almost like a beautiful ending.
Yeah. Well, as we approach a beautiful ending, is there anything that you'd like to leave people with who've been curious about what we've touched upon today?
Well, I feel like the main thing is this is the sort of conversations that I love to have. And when I'm working with people, I don't care whether I'm mentoring or coaching. I want to be the same person that I am with you. And that's always, that's where I really move to. I used to wear business suits and I realized one day I hate business suits. I gave them all away. And the more authentic I can be in living in my own life and having this conversation, the way I speak as a coach, a mentor, a human, all be congruent. That's the message I'd like to live. And if you get that through personal development, through engaging in learning about MCC or whatever, it's really the journey of wholeness to be the person that can be that or be whole mm-hmm. in the way that that feels right for us and to express ourselves from that place, especially in these times where there's a lot of things pulling at us, is how do we sort of hold that center and be from there, be out there in the world from there every day.
I realize that there's something funny I want to put on the table before we leave, and that is the Friday before I was notified of my new credential, I had some heavy sighs, and I thought to myself, maybe next month, entertain the idea of not being a coach. I felt like I was getting slaughtered with parental and educational duties, and I wasn't sure how to put one foot in front of the other. And I want to be really transparent about this, because it's so easy to look at people and say, well, they have it all figured out. Yeah, no. No. And I really thought maybe it's time to just finally consider what it would be like to not be a coach, or to not relate to yourself as a coach. And as I was having a conversation with my wonderful colleague, Valerie Livesay, an email came through, and you know, I was like, oh my god, what is this? And it said, you know, you're now a master certified coach. And I thought to myself, well, there goes that plan. But I think it comes back to the knowing and not knowing all in the same breath. I think it's kind of very Taoist, but you need to be able to step away from it to embrace it fully. Step away from identification as a coach to truly be a coach.
Yes, that was the word that came to me, is when our identification is I am a coach, or I am this, versus I coach, as my husband says, I coach, I'm not identified as that, or I, that they're just different parts of me, but they aren't my identity.
Yeah.
And I know for me, I've really worked on that, and I love what I do. And I would be very, very sad if I couldn't do what I'm doing right now for some reason. And I'm not, this is not, I've got all the skills, tools, whatever, for my self-growth. And that's the most important thing. And I can contribute. And I need every day to work on my self-care to be the best person, because I cannot be a good person otherwise. I can be emotionally inappropriate with.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, it's important to look at your identity and how it's tied up with having a MCC now, or versus I have my MCC. Where's the journey taking me now? It's a touch point on the journey of learning and life and integration. And sometimes, I mean, yeah. So what if you're not a coach for a while?
I was just thinking, so what? Like, I think that the proper way for me to relate to the master certified coach credential is both. This is great. This is outstanding. And so what? And not one without the other. Like, you need both of them.
Yeah. Living with paradox, living with. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the end,
mm-hmm.
This and that, not this or that. Oh, we're getting so philosophical here.
Let's not be philosophical. On a more practical note, I want to offer something. Carly hasn't asked me to do this, but without reservation, if you're working toward a credential, And you need required mentoring hours. Carly helps people at the associate certified coach, at the professional certified coach, at the master certified coach level. Consider working with Carly. I found it to be just exactly what I needed at an unexpectedly troubling time in history. And whether it's the best of times or the worst of times, consider reaching out to Carly for support in growing as a coach. Even if that means you'll end up with a new credential.
Well, it's so delightful to hang out with you and hear your amazing integration of language. I just am so always interested in when you speak. I just want to ask more, but thank you. That's very, very gracious of you to say that. And I just love the fact that I get to play with a whole lot of great humans who want to learn and grow and be the best coaches they can be, the best trainers, the best faculty, the best humans. That's what I want for myself. Is I want to have my insides match my outsides. I want how I view myself internally to match my external behavior. That's my objective every day. That's my purpose. And if I do that, then I know I'm a good human for others.
Yeah. Well, I have arrived and I have not arrived. this is a journey. And I think that this is a good milestone marker to observe. And that's what this conversation is. But I would be interested to talk to you as I grow more comfortable with this part of the journey. So let's do another one.
We do. But for now, congratulations.
Thank you very much. And thank you for joining me on MCC. Where Genius Grows. Yeah. All Gideon right. Coleman, MCC. Thank you.
Thank you.
This episode of Where Genius Grows is brought to you by K Street Coaching. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe to Where Genius Grows on iTunes or Stitcher or the podcast platform of your choice, and leave a 5-star review so that other people like you will find this conversation and benefit from it just as much as you have.